My name's Darius Larson, and I'm the moderator of the forum, and moderator, if he or she does his or her job, it means that that person will do minimal speaking and maximum listening, which means that you will have to do both maximum listening and maximum speaking. As village philosopher, I never thought that the toughest part of the job would be coming up with titles for these forums. We had a whole host of them, some of them that are just too bad to mention, but some of them, just to give you an idea of how different this forum could have taken based on the titles. Wasps don't make honey. Wasps cause hives. By the way, we researched that. Wasps do cause hives. And also, wasps don't make honey. Color me a racist, or I got rhythm. And all the rest we will not go into. The one we chose is, I am not prejudiced, but. That's tonight's forum. And I thought maybe for us to get into this, I would like to try, and I know it's so difficult for me, but to establish one ground rule for tonight. That is, and I'll even give a little bit, the majority of the time when we're speaking, let us try to speak in the first person, I feel this way, I think this. Except for the first thing we're going to be doing. Unless you want to speak. And that is, I want you to complete that sentence. I am prejudiced, but. To help, I am not prejudiced, excuse me. I am not prejudiced, but. And then complete it, and if you can, by completing it as you yourself would complete it, or to get a feeling of what we may want to talk about tonight, how you might feel other people that you know would complete that sentence. So let's just throw it open, and when something comes to your mind, however profound or ridiculous it may sound, I'd just like to have you share it. Okay. I don't know where else we want to go tonight, but that's just to kind of tune us in to some of those things that we maybe all too often don't like to think about. And for two or three or four of us who are getting together over lunch and supper talking about this theme tonight, we all decided, at least in ourselves, that I'm not prejudiced, but I am. And how and in what way are we prejudiced? And how and in what way can we do anything about that prejudice?
Why don't you give us a good definition of prejudice?
Yeah.
Would someone like to do that? Well, to be honest, what we were saying was the word racist has a kind of almost a ho-hum sound to it, and we wanted to say something without using the word racist, but I don't know. Do you have a thought over there on prejudice?
No, I don't know if this dovetails with what you're saying, but it seems to me, I was curious if one of the ground rules we could have for tonight is not to determine whether we are or aren't prejudiced, but to try to get at where is my prejudice. And it seems to me that, as far as I'm concerned, the assumption is that we all are prejudiced. It's just a matter of determining where it's at. I may have different prejudices than you, but I think we both have. I don't know if that's a fair assumption.
Yeah. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah. A lot of times we think that prejudice is bad, and that's where I think maybe we need to take it from the bank, you know. I'm not prejudiced, but I've got standards.
As well as against somebody.
Okay.
And I think that definition is very important.
Does anyone like to propose a definition then, if you feel that's important, before you can decide whether or not we can pursue whether or not we are prejudiced?
How about prejudged?
Thinking you know a lot about a person from a few clues. Thinking you know everything there is to know about somebody based upon just a little bit of information.
I would say it's objective upon a person rather than making them an object rather than a person. Thinking them in terms of a distinct stereotype and not thinking of an individual.
I would say it also involves emotion.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Some sort of emotional reaction or feeling to that, as well as in your head.
I'm thinking that prejudice is more of an emotional response, a personal individual response to another person or group. I think racism goes beyond that, and racism can be the way a whole system operates. So I think, to a certain extent, we're talking about different things when we talk about racism.
So that's one form of prejudice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not synonymous. Should we, racism is a bit narrower view of prejudice, right? Would it be safe for our discussion, or would you want to discuss something else to narrow it that far for tonight? Or are you here to deal with some other form of prejudice? Hearing no...
I'd like to discuss the whole gamut myself, because I think they're all related.
Sure, there's prejudice against age or against youth.
Religion,
color,
sex,
will, men. But that's so broad. If we can, if I can maybe just make this statement, and push me if you don't want this, if we could look at the race question, the race issue, and then where you feel the other issues fit, or help illustrate, because some of them really do overlap. Be sure to bring it up. Otherwise, we're going to go in all different directions, and we're not going to have any sense of closure, which we hardly do anyway, anytime. But we'd like to think that we can. So, then back to the question over here about can we assume that we are all prejudiced? Can I push that further? Is it an assumption, a safe assumption, to assume that we admit that we are all racists?
No.
Yeah. How many say no? How many say yes?
Okay.
The question is, I am a racist. How many would answer that question, not me, but you as an I? I am a racist. How many of you would say that you are? Raise your hand.
How about at times?
Any way you want to raise your hand or not. Okay. How many of you are not racist? Okay. Why did some of you raise your hand one way and why the other way?
Because there's an unclear definition.
I think that we all assume that we really aren't when it comes right down to it, but actually when it comes right down to it, we really are and don't even know it. There are circumstances a lot of us have never had an opportunity to even find out, really, because we haven't been in any situations which make us confront it.
I think that's a really good point, because philosophically we can grow up to feel that we are not racist, and we truly believe we are not, and live by that. But oftentimes, because of our own culture, we haven't had an intimate situation where all of a sudden we're faced with making a decision. And that can really point out where we really might be.
I would like to point out that when it comes to us paying our taxes, there's where our prejudices can show up. By do we allow our government to cut off the programs that support the children, that support the old people, does not this indicate our prejudices? Because that is a racism, but if it goes in, like around Seattle, if it's supporting the poor people, it's going to go right into the central area where our blacks are, and where our Southeastern Asian people are. And you say, well, I'm not going to pay all that stuff to support that people. Let them get out and work. You know, is that not racism?
Occasionally I get into a room whether I'm the only white bunch of black people, and I still have to admit to some uncomfortable feelings, and I'm not sure that I can really be me as freely as I can in a room full of white, and that's a form of racism.
I don't think we'll ever get over it that racism until we don't even think. It doesn't even occur to us that somebody you know, the same color. I know. I live across from Cornell, and I think I'm very open and so on, but I've never been quite the same feeling I have with my other neighbors.
Back here and then over here.
I'm confused. Are we a race of men or a race of women or a race of people? And if, you know, is racism just color? Just culture, or is it something?
Are you leaning one way or the other? Or are you just
I'm just trying to figure out what the definition of racism is.
Okay. If anybody can help, just chime in.
That was precisely my question. I don't know what we're talking about.
I think we're talking about differences. Just anytime you see a person, that person is different, and at least I jump to a conclusion often. Someone looks different, or there's something different about them, and I therefore make an assumption that I have no basis for except a difference I see.
I think the danger that they are different. You know, there's no doubt about it that the Negro culture, the black culture, is different from our culture. But I think the danger is. To me, a racist is a person who thinks that his way is better, that I'm better, you know, basically better. And that I think, is where the danger is.
On that basis, then, it seems that simply by practicing our religion, then we make a statement that is racist in saying that ours is right and others are wrong. And it may well be that that's what we're doing. That if we say we have a corner on the market of truth, then the Buddhists do not, and they are wrong, and our way is best. And so, using that kind of definition, whether we talk about color or social or cultural definitions or where people come from originally or what religion they practice, saying that we're right about something and not being able to include somebody else's belief system simply by expressing our own, we express a racist point of view, we've seen.
Well, that probably says that if you believe in anything, you're a racist. I can.
No, what you said, which is not an assumption I would make, if I'm hearing you right, is that if we believe that our religion has a corner on the market, then it's put down to all the other corners. Is that what you were saying? Not to say, some people would also say that we don't have a corner on the truth, but we have a specially revealed truth, which may make that statement different. But I don't know if you want to go that direction.
I don't know
going
to that necessarily, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. But it's like my statement I've made several times. The only people I can't stand are narrow-minded people. As soon as I make that statement, I become that which I cannot stand. And that's what gets me into all sorts of problems. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. What is it about race? People that are different from us due to race. So right at the moment, although there's overlaps, I will assume that we're not getting into male-female issues, but there are overlaps. I'm not getting into poor white, wealthy white issues, but there are overlaps. But the traditional, there's Oriental, there's Anglo, there's Hispanic, there's Black, there's Indian, there's whatever else you can add and add and add. What about those variety of people that causes us problems in our own communities and in our own personal lives and as we view and live in this world? Does that help narrow it a little bit, or does that even expand it further? I don't know.
We come from a college town, and there are maybe 100 Oriental, Black, South, or African students. And some years ago, when it first became, you know, important that there should be this integration between races, that there should be any division between white and Black students, it didn't work because the Blacks themselves demanded their own center. So to me, that's reverse racism. I'm not the only one that's guilty of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that may happen in other instances too.
Mm-hmm. There and in there.
Along with that, is there a basic need in all of us to belong? To be worth something, we have to belong to something. So we grow up belonging to the culture and the community and the church that is familiar to us. And the other cultures, whatever they may be, have grown up in a belongingness in a different sense. And so we start to distrust things that aren't feeding into that belongingness sense. I don't know if I'm following, but I think we search for being comfortable and giving our lives meaning by belonging to a history. And if we don't understand another history or feel insecure about it, we get scared and form prejudices from it.
Did you have to talk?
I completely expect you.
Okay.
What bothers me is when we consider ourselves truly followers of Christ, if we dislike people because of different color of skin. And I think prejudice, when we're prejudiced against people, we do dislike them, don't we? So how can we be really Christian?
I don't know if I could honestly say I don't think I dislike, but I'm pretty sure I ignore. And is there a difference there? Is that a more subtle form? I'm not sure. Do I not see because it upsets me?
One form of racism that I've sort of wondered if I am suffering from or whatever. Just an example, we know someone in Minneapolis who worked with Indian parents, and she always said that Indian parents were just terrible in her school district because they wouldn't send their kids to school on time, and the kids didn't come clean to school and so on. And I kept trying to say, well, maybe it's not because they're Indian, which was what she was inferring, but because of the economic problem, she would have trouble with these parents. And I was trying to make the point that maybe it's economics that's the problem and not really racism. And then when I stand back from that, I wonder if I'm just trying to, you know, cover up, you know, something that is still racism, that that maybe economics and racism sort of go hand in hand or something like that. Do we have trouble sending our children to inner city schools because of the race problem or because of the economic backgrounds of the people that go to those schools? Or, you know, when we examine our motives, where do we come down?
I have a couple of problems, I guess. One is that I think a lot of the racism comes from people who are, if you will, different from me. And therefore, I feel at ease with them. When I was a kid, the Catholics were different. They ate meat on, or ate fish on Friday, and they had different church services and things like this, and it was a different society than I was brought up in. And they were different to me. I think the second thing that I have a problem with is that I usually don't know them very well. I don't know blacks very well, I don't know Hispanics very well, because they're not in my sphere of my world. And they're sort of outside that, and therefore I don't know them, and they're different.
Okay, over here, over there, there, and then there. did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did.
Okay, remember the order, I forgot it.
I was first.
Okay.
using the word I found that in our church experience, and I'm from Tulsa, Washington, and we have a substantial population of Southeast Asian immigrants in the community, and our church sponsored a young man to come over to this country whose family had been seeking for 3 years to have him come over, and he came over as a young boy, 16 years old. And from our discussion here, we felt very magnanimous and generous that we would contribute a few dollars to have this young man come over to our country. He came to our church, everybody patted him on the back, sent him down the road. Said, here you are, son. This is America. We did it for you. Goodbye. And basically, that's what happened to that guy. And he has become part of the Southeast Asian community. But what did we as a church do for that guy? We didn't do anything for him. And it's we asked him to come to this country for ourselves, not for him, because we could feel good about what we had done. And yet, as a church, we acted very racist. And I'm sure that the Oriental or the Southeast Asian community as a whole probably reacts that way to we as a group of Lutheran churches. And I don't think our experience is particularly unique. I think that's probably the experience that most of us have in our home churches that have sponsored Southeast Asians. And I think what a poor Christian witness that is. And what a racist reaction that is.
Well, why did you just pat him on the back and send him off?
What I think happens is we are uncomfortable with the cultural differences, and I don't think it's the color of his skin, and I don't think it's I don't think that's the problem, but I think it's the cultural gap and the language gap. Those two factors particularly.
Uphold him for at least a year.
That's right. And you know, we bought him a few clothes and things like that and had some interaction with him, but very, very superficial interaction. As far as I know, nobody in the church invited him to their home. He had a family, that kind of thing. And I don't think that experience is particularly unique to our congregation.
Don't you think he was more comfortable, though, with the South Asian people than with your community?
He was more comfortable with it. That's just really a rational
explanation.
You really like to know
more. I know that people think of it as rationalization, but still, I don't think that you have to be prejudiced and still be uncomfortable with being people of similar interests or backgrounds.
I think what you said was a very reasonable reaction from a human point of view. But I don't think that's the Christian reaction. The action that Christ would have is to display toward a person of another race and culture.
There's a difference in showing on earth that you can't be with us because you're not like us, and saying come and join us, but also
But are you saying that you would have liked it to be a both and rather than an either or? I mean, to be involved with people of his own race and also people
of the church. To separate himself from people of his own culture. But if we do it, anticipate having this significant minority assimilate to a large degree in our society, we need to help them.
Before we go over here, did you have a point related to this?
Point directly related to that in Seattle, South Seattle, in the Federal Way area. There is a church strongly committed to bringing in Southeast Asians. And for a long time, we've kind of watched this in awe because this must be where their minister feels the call, because I don't know how many families they've brought into this. I mean, last year, I think it was 30 they brought in, so it may be 40 or 50 or 60. The last time I drove by that church, it was still Lutheran, and it had the original name Lutheran Church. And then in the small sign, very obvious on the road, was now Asian Lutheran Church. And so there was a risk involved, I would guess now at this point. But there's probably almost as many Southeast Asians as there are the original members. And I think that's probably been a unique experience.
The answer to church growth?
Was second there, or there? I forgot. Here, okay, go.
I think one of my problems has been, which was simply that the way of life that I'm accustomed to is the appropriate way for humans to live. And I learned not long ago from a workshop that was run by Native Americans that the fundamental way to live with people of many cultures is to assume that their way of living is just as valid as ours. And what Black Anonymous pretended to be a role about the Native Americans and how maybe they didn't get through on time because it was an economic problem. But when they tell you about themselves, they say, no, clock time is not where we are. Season time makes sense to us. The clock time is irrelevant. But they tell us that. You have to tell me that. Now, if I assume that clock time is the appropriate way that humans live, then I really miss the boat in understanding that they may have another way of thinking about life. And the only way I will find that out is to have them tell me and to be willing to sit and listen. And get the situation that I can't hear them and not decide, well, there's no chance.
In relationship to that, it's interesting with a Korean, I think it was, who told me once, and I'll put it into a Holden experience, that for him, he would have no trouble doing all the switchbacks. But it's us who are the waspians who need to go, you know, who ride up, you know. This is the way they live, you know. It is a backwards way. You know, the same place, different time. It is a different way of thinking in that sense, which causes the whole racist thing,
I think, in a lot of ways. One of our basic problems in America is that we are slicing, language-wise and that's all we see are other Americans, and so we think that is the way everybody is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's an affliction that we have to work on.
I think it was over here and then over here.
Well, I'm just wondering if the Lutheran Church is an extremely racist church. I live in a valley that is primarily Scandinavian and Dutch. Indian community. We don't have Hispanics. We don't have Indians in our church. When Lee Griffin was talking, he talked about the fact that Christopher Stendhal had an article written on Romans 13, and he said the loving community are those that are really able to embrace differences. And I think that's a tremendously difficult thing to do. We've experienced, we've had three families from Vietnam come into our church, and we've taken care of them very well economically. But even that's been a real downward spiral, because every time I've seen us give to them, then if the response of gratitude isn't there, then we're angry with them. Why aren't they more grateful? They should be more grateful because we're so good to them. And it really becomes a well-meaning people can do that, and we get caught into that all the time. And that's a real tough one to correct.
Here and there.
I guess it's always interested me to find out what the root causes of any kind of racism are, because very often the reasons why we have racist feelings culturally are perhaps good reasons when they begin. Perhaps they're real, solid reasons why people dislike certain other types of people. The people who have mentioned Native American culture, and when I moved a few years ago from Chicago, which I consider to be probably one of the most racist northern cities there is in this country, to Minneapolis, my original feeling was, it's such a relief to be out from under the burden of that kind of mentality, until I discovered the Native American community in Minneapolis and realized that deep hatred for Native Americans in that part of the country is like nothing I'd ever felt before. And when I read a book not too long ago called The Indian in North America, an image was presented in this book which suddenly showed me something about who those people are and who we are in relation to them. The image was perhaps somewhere in northern Minnesota or North Dakota, of the white people who were the first pioneers on the edge of the wilderness, on the very edge of where white people were coming and taking and moving west, were these people who were perhaps a small family, nothing more. 2, 3, 4, 5 people who built a house that they tried to protect themselves in, who tilled the land and tried to keep themselves alive, and every so often they would look out over the plains and they would see a nation that would simply slowly move by, living off land, living in community, living in harmony with nature, unafraid of what was there. While these white people sat hovering, huddling, trying to keep themselves existing. And their hatred grew out of the fact that they didn't, not only did they not understand those people had something that they could never have themselves, that we white people could never have. And that in relation then to what we were talking about last night, when we talk about Oriental people and realize that as far as nuclear armaments go, there have only been two nuclear weapons used in the history of the world, and they have been used by this nation against Orientals. And the reasons why we hate people are not reasons that can be simply taken away. They are real, and they are deep, and they are solid. And the reasons why we act on them, on our hatreds, are perhaps the place at which we need to try to understand what to do. Hatred is hatred. Our actions are not separated from them, but they are different from them.
Okay.
You didn't forget what I was saying. I think the business of context is real important, because that's where I find myself, is ignoring the fact that there's a point of view from Indian friends that I've got and talking with them. Had my consciousness raised a lot, and it's always a humbling experience. You know, as soon as I feel like I've got it, all I need to do is call them on the phone or stop by. The other thing is, too, it seems like there's a lot of rhetoric that grows around people wanting to have well-meaning intentions about being friendly with everyone regardless of the color of their skin. Usually that's not really the problem, what color their skin is. It's how they act and behave and live their lives, and what they're granted by legislative means or litigation. In Northwest, we have Indians that are allowed to fish and catch half of the fish and steal them. And that's caused an incredible amount of difficulty now among people who are quite willing to be very magnanimous about people who are half a world away. But when the economic issues come home to roost, that's when people's feelings really come out. Another thing that Griffin said was that you tend to rely on more primitive forms of behavior when you're under pressure. What about the issue of affirmative action, which is a remedial way of dealing with the racism, that is a deliberate exclusion of someone from a position because of their sex or their sexual preference or their race? How do you all feel about that? You know, if you have to wait to not be promoted because somebody is going to be promoted over you simply because of your race, maybe that's a topic that needs to be brought up. I think somehow we need to bring this closer to home.
I'm just wondering, to make a premise, I'm wondering if I am not prejudiced and racist because I'm insecure and that I operate out of that insecure position. I'm not sure about myself. I'm not secure. And therefore, I operate out of fear toward anybody else who fears me, who lets me know or by what they are or who they are, exposes me to my own insecurities. So I'm wondering, would it be possible to say that a secure person would not be prejudiced? And I guess at that point I could almost bring in the gospel. I'm wondering about this business about Christ's statement, a person who cannot love himself cannot love another. He's not talking about egotism, I don't think, or anything like that, or conceit. He's talking about coming to terms with who we are in all business. I wonder if I'm not prejudiced because I'm insecure. I deal with that by putting others down. So I operate out of fear. Anytime I operate out of fear, I'm in trouble.
Right here and then right now.
I think you can be prejudiced and racist and be secure at the same time.
that's the other extreme, yeah.
A lot of people here are talking as, you know, you want to talk in I statements. Okay, I can only talk in an I statement in a system in which I live. And I live in a racist, male, white male system, WASP system. And unless you live in a cave and have no contact with this system at all, you're going to be racist. That's just the way it is. And so I am racist. There's no way of me getting around it, even though I am a secure person. I live in this system, and I think that's kind of the malady of Americans in general, is they don't think of a system, they think of individuals. Am I racist? And they look at themselves and they say, well, gee, I don't think I'm racist. But look at the system. The system is racist. And that affects us. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Renee?
Dave just said it almost word for word.
Okay, so you say diddle?
Okay.
Do you have a hand? Your hand?
You know, from these last couple of statements, I really don't think that there's prejudice against one person. You know, one person can move in a community and it's all right. You know, one or two Yankees can come down south and you're accepted. But whenever a whole herd comes down, you start taking my job. All right, and the same thing with blacks. You know, one or two blacks can move in a community. And I think they're really accepted and they go, you know, they get along, no problems. Nobody has any hatred for them. But whenever, you know, it gets to be 10 and 20%, and it gets to mean money, you know, that's when the hatred comes in.
Your hand up?
Yes, I'd like to comment on what he just said, that maybe by and large, if one or two people move into a community, that the whole community does not turn against them. But there are individuals within the community who do. And some of those individuals may be very important. You brought up the point of a Yankee moving, you know, to Texas. Well, I was a Yankee who moved to Texas. And I ended up in a situation that I had a boss who flat out told me I would not be promoted because I was a Yankee. Now, I did not have that problem with the other people I worked with. But the man who called it in that position was prejudiced.
About a year and a half ago, I moved into a primarily black neighborhood in North Minneapolis and was one of two young white women on the block and was referred to as the other one. No, Jackie was one.
What was she called?
Huh? I don't know. She's probably the other one to be. But suddenly, after growing up in a small town in northern Minnesota where there were two black kids in my whole school, to becoming a minority was real, real different. And it is very different being a minority. And I never considered myself prejudiced. I thought, oh, yeah, sure, I like black kids I went to school with. Well, it's real different when you live there. And I think there's a part of me that says, no, I'm not, because that's not okay to say that I don't like people because of what they do or because of what color they are. There's a lot of white people I don't like, and there's a lot of black people I don't like, mainly because of their behavior. But I think there are times when I tend to assume, you know, because our house has been robbed twice, and the first time for sure it was by black kids that were seen. You know, when white people walk in front of my house, I'm not worried. When black people do, I get real worried. Yeah. And I sit there and think, are they going to come and kick my door in?
I think that's a good example and a good experience, you know, for us to be put in the position where we become a minority. But I think that's still not all of it, because no matter what position we're put in, we can, in this society, anyway, never experience what it feels like to want to be another race. And I think for a whole lot of people that grow up black, Latino, Asian, whatever, because of all the pressure in this society that white is better, white is more successful, there's a whole emotional thing that people go through of trying to be what they can never be, which is white. And I think that's something that's real hard for us to understand, just what that does inside to a person.
It was mentioned earlier that the fact that if you have one or two or a few of another race move into your community, that it doesn't matter. And the reason that it doesn't matter is because they essentially become white. They live the way the white people in the community do. So they're not a threat. But when you put a group of them together, then they have a chance to let their own culture grow, and then they become different. Then they are a threat. But as long as there's one or two or three, then they're essentially white, and so they're no threat.
Why are they a threat?
I don't know, but I think the racist issue to me is not one of skin color so much as it is the cultural differences and language differences, too, as the case may be. But it seems to me that it's more the culture than it is actually the skin color. And we may not be prejudiced against skin color, because that's a very obvious prejudice, but for example, driving through a black neighborhood and seeing the kind of, I don't know, revulsion maybe that you have with a squalor and that kind of thing, it's not against the skin color, but it's against the culture that the people exhibit and the things that you observe.
Yeah.
I wonder. Sure, extreme side recently, we don't have a great many blacks in our community, but some, and I recently found myself waking up and seeing a black man and having a very negative emotional reaction. And I asked myself why, and I realized it was because I was angry with my husband, and here was another man, but here was a man who is very susceptible to being made a scapegoat of, because it's in with certain people that blacks can be put down. And so I was just using him as a scapegoat for my own feelings.
It just occurred to me, and I guess it's too obvious to have even thought about before, and I don't even know why I'm explaining it with that, but economics have been mentioned so many times this evening, and it's curious to me also that no one has yet mentioned Jews
and the realization that we as Christians base our religion in Jewish culture and Jewish religion, and
not because they are poor, but because they happen to do good with money. And that in a situation, in a country such as ours, capitalistic country, in which we praise the use of money, we are still living in a country that almost sided with Hitler. We are still living in a country where being a Jew will not allow you into places still. And somehow, again, as I said before, and it just amazes me where the bases of our hatreds come from, and how we, the fact that the Crusades spent much of their, the Crusaders spent much of their time killing off Jews. Somehow, historically and personally, we touch on groups of people like that, and our fear and our hatred are based in things that are much more real than they are emotional, I think, when it comes right down to it. I've always felt that for some reason the Jews were persecuted because they had something to tell us and we didn't want to hear it. And maybe that's where our hatred lies with the last level.
I have a couple things. You have something?
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, I've been told that the human race is part of the animal kingdom. And aren't we born with a sense of self-preservation like other animals? I know that personal experience, if you put a colored chicken, we're not chickens, but if you put a colored chicken in with a bunch of white chickens, in 5 minutes they'll kill that colored chicken. And do we have that born into us? Do we have a sense of preservation that comes out that way?
I don't know. That could be what original sin's all about. But there's also the image of God that's hopefully breathed into us at some point too, that hopefully can deal with some of that. I don't know. Do you have a question or a statement?
Well, I'm in connection with this, a fine example of our church, our government. I wonder how religion as a whole feels about the way the Native American was treated. He did a better job of conservation than our country here. Is that part of the overall program that no matter what is ahead of us, we need to push, no matter how we do it, push our way in onto other people? Religion, government, the whole bit. Missionaries were sent to the Indians, and they had a good religion of their own to a certain extent. And same way with our government, the conservation, government helped the settlers come in and wipe out the buffalo herds that the Indians were living on. And they followed the buffalo and lived up and still maintained conservation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of things from different cultures, from different races that each of us in our own race can learn from, and rather than to assume otherwise is probably a very fatal mistake. I hear you say that.
Yes, I am. That's a question that I have. Is that really what prejudice is all about? Your reluctance, for whatever reason, fear or thinking I'm better, but a reluctance to let that other culture teach me.
Then it's guilt.
It's kind of back to the Genesis account and the tree of good and evil, or I want it all, I want to know it all, and it's a threat if somebody else has a different way of knowing it.
Yeah, right. There and then here.
Maybe we should explore the question and try answering that, why did God make us all different colors? And,
could be another form. I don't think we can get into that. That's a good question, yeah.
Going back to our forefathers, they migrated here from Germany and from Sweden and Norway and Denmark. When they came, they didn't all get together. They were mostly that Lutheran country. They didn't all get together with one Lutheran group. The Germans had to be here, and the Swedes had to be here, and the Norwegians had to be here. And we still have that segregation.
Yeah. Listen to a thing that I thought they were. I live in St. Paul, and they have a main school, inner city, to try to help integration. And so they've also made it a real fine school program. I sent my kids there as first and second graders, because part of it would be to be in this mixture of people, to learn how to get along with blacks and Jews and Orientals. And the first primary grades, I had every nationality in my home. But now that they're finishing up fifth and sixth grade, it's only white kids who are coming to play. And we try to discuss it. And I really can't get a sense of what changed in those from primary when they're so innocent to now when they're already starting to segregate themselves.
It's almost time to close, and I normally don't do this. I mean, I know you don't like to say I want the last word, but I do, because there's been something that's been on my paper here that I haven't gotten to because we have had a good discussion. That is just basically a quick, a short one-sentence thing, and then a paragraph from a book called Liberating Our White Ghetto by Joe Barnt. And the quote, and then the statement I have on my paper here is it really about what can I do and still receive the same privilege that I'm currently receiving. I'm wanting to continue at my own level of status, my own level of beliefs. I don't want to have my own way of life changed at all. And if I'm saying that and still thinking I'm not racist, I think a larger world vision. That's just one statement, and we can talk later about this in another form. The other is a quote here. It is impossible for third world nations to raise their people to a level where life and health are possible, while at the same time continuing to feed our luxury, even without considering the increase of radical anti-Western feelings and the explosive passions for liberation present in nearly every nation of the third world. Simply the increase in third world political and economic self-determination will bring new controls over our lives. Without the automatic availability of the world's goods, our style of life will drastically be curtailed. Our ability to waste, to wage war, and to design the world's future will be undermined. Just some things to think about as we go out. And I'm very curious with each and every one of you over coffee or in between the meal settings, if what we've talked about here, if we want to go further on this, whether it be a smaller group at a different time, please let me know, because we've aired some feelings tonight, which I think have been interesting for me to hear.